your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Today on Locked On NHL, it is yet another Western Conference Wednesday as we join up to figure out what is going on in the West. My name is Sarah Avampato, host of Locked On Kings. I'm here with Tom Gazzola, frequent Locked On NHLer, frequent Oilers expert, and we're here to talk about some cool stuff that's going on today and, you know, all current time in the NHL. And the first thing we're going to talk about is a little bit of a follow-up on last week, because we spent a little time looking at the rumors at that time of the reverse retro NHL jerseys that were going to come out. And now they are officially out. We have seen all of them. And today we're going to judge them, because that's one of our core competencies here is judging stuff. So Tom, great to talk to you again, to have you share some thoughts on these jerseys. So I figured we would go through our like winners and losers, who missed the mark, who surprised us, who just really should not have been participating in this exercise at all. What are your thoughts?
Well, plenty of thoughts, really. And I'll start by saying this. Frequent expert is giving me way too much credit. So thank you, Sarah. It's always a pleasure. Sometimes expert is good, I think. And if you listen to people around Edmonton, maybe they'd say never an expert. I'm just kidding. But yes, the wonderful reverse retros have been unveiled formally to us. We saw some leaks. You and I were talking about it last week. Neat concept, cool program. And like we predicted, some gems and some absolute monstrosities. And you're right. Like, some of these teams, did they even try? Did the New York Islanders even bother? Because what they did is released their own uniform that they're basically using right now. Like, what is that garbage? Way to be no fun, Lou Lamoriello. Didn't want to go with Captain Highliner or Captain Fishsticks, whatever that mid-90s look was, which is a damn shame. And instead, we're stuck with basically a Navy version of the Islanders' current uniforms. So thanks for nothing, New York Islanders. Just no creativity points whatsoever. Some great ones that actually turned out really well. I love seeing the Hartford Whalers. Interesting that some teams, Sarah, went with the gray look. I know that the Carolina Hurricanes, you know, throwing it back to the Whalers with the base gray. Neat. Really neat in my books. Although you look at that one and then you go to another gray uniform with a fellow WHA alumnus, I suppose, in a roundabout way, in the Winnipeg Jets, they went with a darker gray one, and they went with their like 79-80s look. And Sarah, I'm not going to lie to you. I think it's not that great. It's just bland. It didn't work out. It didn't turn out great whatsoever. Kudos to the Ottawa Senators, the all red with the black trim. Not bad at all. Montreal Canadiens, neat to see them in blue. And Toronto Maple Leafs, you might want to start from scratch on that one because it sucks.
Yeah, I feel like there were a handful that, speaking of ones that didn't try at all, Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
They just stuck their logo on a white jersey and put some little bling on it. Like, I had higher hopes for Detroit, and they thoroughly disappointed me. Yeah, I'm definitely with you on the Islanders one. I looked at that and I was like, there is nothing different. Like, the colors, maybe. And like, to add insult to injury to all the people who were hoping that they would have brought back the fishermen, I was on Twitter earlier before we recorded this, and the Islanders are releasing a like throwback, like it's like they have like a backpack and a hat and a beanie, and it all has the fisherman logo on it. So clearly someone there is like on board with, you know, bringing that logo back, but it just didn't make the cut for the jersey, which is a shame because so many other teams have gone back to what they were wearing in the 90s for this jersey. And a little bit of nostalgia. We see the Ducks with their Wild Wing logo. We see the Blues with their trumpet thing that has come back. So there's a lot of teams leaning into that. And The Islanders so many of those would have sold if they put that fisherman on it, because there are so many people who aren't even Islanders fans who are into that just because it's one of those so bad it's good kind of things. And they could have sold so many jerseys, and instead they gave us the exact same jersey they already have.
Awful. There are some, and I should have mentioned these ones, and I'm really impressed with the Avalanche going with Avalanche colors, Nordiques uniform, and the old Nordiques logo. Very nice touch. And then the Minnesota Wild going with the North Stars motif, mm-hmm. but with the Wild logo. Very nice. I want to throw this out to you because you're in the Chicago area. You're around there. You've done some Hawks coverage. What do you make of the Hawks obscuring the logo and making it hard to see?
You know, it's one of those things where I think that if you are going out of your way to not actually show what your jersey looks like, you know you have a problem and you're just hoping to be able to evade it. I definitely understand why there is so much back and forth on should they change the logo, should they not change the logo, who do they listen to, whatever. But I feel like this would have been a great opportunity for them to, it would have been a little against the spirit of the retro, whatever, but it would have been a great opportunity for them to try something different and mm-hmm. to use a logo that wasn't, a dismembered head mm-hmm. That has, so many people upset now that are, talking about it now. They had the opportunity to go with feathers or some other motif that still ties it all together. But, I think that it says a lot that they weren't even willing to do that. Who knows who had control over the design. I mean, I've definitely heard, some sources say that Adidas basically came to them and said, here's your jersey. And they didn't really have much say in it. So who knows where this falls, but it was a little disappointing, especially to see them try to kind of obfuscate their way out of it by just not showing the front of the jersey. That raises a million alarm bells of
totally.
What are you trying to hide? Potentially made it even worse than if they had just shown the front of the jersey in the first place.
Exactly. And here's an interesting idea. Maybe you go with a throwback design and then you do a Blackhawks or Chicago wordmark instead of the logo that we're so accustomed to seeing. It's a beautiful logo, Sarah, I will say. It's an iconic logo. But as we witnessed here in Edmonton with our football team, now known as the Double E Football Club temporarily, formerly the Eskimos for 71 season or 71 years. We've come to a time of social awareness. And, this could be debated forever. But in terms of how much it offends people of Indigenous heritage, Blackhawks compared to Eskimos, I don't know how they stack up to one another, but it is interesting. There's some things you could do, a cool, elegant Chicago font or Blackhawks mm-hmm. font, in a nice word mark with an old jersey style, if you will, with the striping and the shoulder yoke and all of that. But alas, here we are. And you're yep. right. By not highlighting the logo, it was totally caught by people and noticed. And it becomes even more of a story. And here we are discussing it.
I feel like they kind of walked into that one. It's mm-hmm. a little bit damned if you do, damned if you don't. No matter what, people were going to be upset. But I think yep. trying to hide it made people even, more frustrated with the team or whoever made that decision, whether it was the team or the NHL or Adidas or all three of them. Just trying to pretend that it wasn't happening is definitely not the right move. I'm a big fan of ignoring problems and hoping that they go away, but that isn't going to work here. Coming up next, we're going to take a look at some of our favorites from the reverse retro jersey collection. But first, have you heard about Built Go? Because if you haven't, you should. Built Go is brought to you by the same people who brought you Built Bar, so you already know you're getting something that is delicious and good for your body. Built Go is basically the newest, fastest growing, awesomest workout gel on the market. It is the healthy replacement for your energy drink, but the energy in this is not fake. It's all natural. There's protein in it, and it is long lasting, so you know that you're going to actually get what you need out of this workout gel. Whether you're trying to, you know, get some homework done or stay up late to record a podcast, or, you know, you need to help your kids with their assignments and also still go to work and also still do 400 other things, BuildGo is out there to help you break through that wall and keep going. It's like a 5-hour energy drink without the same crash at the end. Plus, it's all natural, so it is better for your body. You can visit BuildGo.com right now, learn more about the product, and use promo code LOCKED, and you get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuildGo.com. Let's go.
Did any of these uniforms, when you saw them finally, did any of them surprise you in a good way where you might have anticipated from what you saw in teasers and thought, oh, that's not going to turn out good, but then you saw them in all their glory and you're like, yeah, that's actually pretty nice. And were there some that you expected to turn out good that actually let you down?
I will say that this is one that I made fun of before it was officially revealed. And then it was when it was revealed, I was like, oh, actually, I don't hate it. And it's what the Ducks did with theirs, you know, having the duck, you know, emerging from the ice. And I definitely made fun of it, like on my own show of, you know, this is ridiculous. Like, why are they doing this? But like somehow just seeing the finished product, like it just felt like quirky. It felt like it was calling back to that nostalgia of the early days of the team, you know, when they were still the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim, and kind of capturing that group of fans who I think would like to see that. Like, I was really expecting to hate it. And then when I saw it, I was like, actually, like, you know, I wouldn't buy it, but like, I can see what they're trying to do with it. And like, I didn't hate it. I was just glad it wasn't orange. I had heard some rumors that it was going to be bright orange, and I was very against that. I don't think that's a very nice color. So the teal was a nice touch. The teams that surprised me, I really liked Montreal's. So I was curious as to what they were going to do with it, because, you know, all the original six teams for the most part have had the same jersey for a very long time.
Yeah.
And like Detroit just failed out of it because they were like, well, we don't know what to do. Here's a white jersey.
Montreal, goodness.
I felt like got a little creative with it and actually was a pretty nice blend of kind of the old school, like barber pole-y kind of jerseys with logo. Like, so I was surprised. I mean, I shouldn't be surprised because I feel like Montreal's usually pretty on point with that, but I had some concern over the original six teams. I was let down by Boston. It really just felt like the current jersey, just in a different color. They have a wealth of, you know, interesting jersey history to come back on. You know, the original, the logo with the bear and the Boston word mark, where it was like kind of fuzzy. Like, I know they just did that for one of the winter outdoor games, but I felt like that could have been something good. But it's the exact same jersey, just a kind of unpleasant yellow color. So I was pretty let down by them.
Yeah, and that's understandable. One I thought that was going to let me down, but I'm just in awe of, is Arizona's. The Kachina Coyote head, with the purple instead of the green from the late 90s, early 2000s. I might have to get a Louis DeBrusque number 29 in that one and get Lou Dog to sign it so I can put it on my man cave wall. And the New York Rangers, going back to the Statue of Liberty, I thought that would be kind of not as good because it just seems so much like their jerseys, but it looks really sharp with the all blue sleeves and the little stripes. Mm-hmm. And I hate to admit it, but I have to, the Calgary Flames bringing back old Blasty and getting rid of the red on the bottom of the sleeves and the bottom of the main part of the shirt actually looks really clean and much better than it used to. So Blasty, you're back, baby. Bring on the Battle of Alberta with these wonderful uniforms and the horse that breathes fire for some reason. That's Calgary. That's Calgary, where they tell you for 10 days a year that they're actually Cowboys. Well, if Calgarians can be Cowboys, then here in Edmonton, you know what, Sarah, we're Pirates.
I love it.
Yep.
did you have a favorite of all of the jerseys? Was there kind of a clear, you know, number one or number two in looking at them?
You know what, Washington, I think, did a great job using its current colors, but placing it onto the 90s, early 2000s Screaming Eagle look. I think that's my number one, and I'll give a runner up. I mean, I think what the Golden Knights are doing is pretty neat. The throwback to the Las Vegas Thunder of the IHL is a nice touch, I think, to kind of recognize the hockey history in Las Vegas. You know, it's not a rich hockey history, but there is one there. And for the Golden Knights to honor and recognize that in their own way is a nice touch, I think.
Yeah, and I have to give a little bit of a shout out to my own team, the Kings, because
beautiful.
They, I feel like, is kind of one of the ones that universally everyone is pretty into. And
yep.
They have disappointed me in the past with some of their special jerseys, but this one, I wasn't even sure I was going to like it until I saw the final product, because I had kind of heard what they were going to do, but I just couldn't totally envision it. But like once it came out, I was like, okay, yeah, no, I probably need one of those. I also, like you said, I really loved Calgary. I think that was really neat, the way they sort of re-envisioned that. And yeah, like you said, Arizona, I love that they're leaning back into the Kachina. I feel like it's something that, you know, if we're talking about how to use, you know, the First Nations and Indigenous people, like people's imagery, in a way that is kind of honoring them and not the way the Blackhawks have done it with a cartoon head. I feel like Arizona has really done well and gets a lot of like kudos from people for the way that they have respected the style of the imagery, but done it in their own way. And I mean, I'm just a big fan of the like bright purple, just real fun. I love that they're bringing that back again, kind of leans into that 90s nostalgia. I definitely remember in high school growing up on the whole other end of the country from Arizona. I still had a friend who wore a Coyotes jersey to school all the time in the like late 90s, just because he thought it was neat. So it definitely has an appeal to people who aren't even Coyotes fans.
You know what's one last thing about that Coyotes uniform? Even though I love it and I'm with you, I think it's great. Isn't it weird that there's a landscape on the bottom of it with a moon and the valley and cacti? Like, you look at that and you go,
I was a little iffy about that.
That's weird. That's so weird.
I feel like the rest of it overcame that, but that was kind of a, like, I might have left that off if it was me, but you know.
Sure.
There's probably a reason why I'm not a graphic designer, so.
I love it.
Up next, we're closing out the show by taking a look at World Juniors and some prospects who we are excited to get to see once competition starts. Make sure you're following this show on Twitter at LockedOnNHLPod so you can keep up with every single episode. You can keep up with cool stuff that is happening across the network, and just make sure you never lose touch with us, your podcast best friends, LockedOnNHLPods on Twitter for more information. So we are going to spend the rest of today taking a quick look at some young up-and-coming players, because we are starting to have World Juniors camps go on. Canada has already started their camp. Some of the other countries have begun bringing players back over to, you know, the Czech Republic and Slovakia, like bring their guys back over. So there's a lot of focus right now on prospects and young players. So I wanted to get kind of a picture of players who were kind of excited to see what they bring to the table next year, whether it's, you know, a guy who was just drafted who we think might be able to make the jump to the NHL, or someone who's really been putting in the work, kind of due for a breakout year. So I want to talk some up and coming young guns to end today's show.
I love it. I mean, you know, what's funny is up in Canada, World Juniors is like, it's this mystical week and a half long tournament. And there's been a lot of magic, and Canada's a perennial contender. But I remember, Sarah, this is a quick anecdote. I remember my old roommate when I was anchoring news in a small town on the border of Alberta and Saskatchewan called Lloydminster. He was just absolutely in awe and infatuated with the World Juniors. And all my colleagues at CKSA, Lloydminster, CITL, Twin Stick, they're from Saskatchewan, and they thought that World Juniors were the be-all, end-all, even saying that it was better than NHL hockey, entertainment-wise. And I would just have to be the bearer of bad news and go, listen, you guys, I think it's a great tournament, but the fact that it's always Canada that's in the gold medal game, and the fact that it's either the US or Sweden generally facing them, and sometimes Finland and sometimes the Czech Republic, that should tell you guys something. It's not that important. And I think I even came back with them to the point that in terms of international rankings, the bearing that this tournament has on teams' international rankings is so minimal. It was like I crushed them. And I was basically public enemy number one in the newsroom for a good month after that. So I learned my lesson.
Oh man, I feel like, yeah, like never disrespect the World Juniors. Someone like you can't talk bad about it on Twitter or you're going to have a whole bunch of people on your case about it.
I haven't spoken ill of World Junior Hockey since 2010.
So there's a bunch of guys who, and the other thing about World Juniors too is like you said, like it's a little bit, it's a blip on the radar of, you know, overall team rankings. And then every so often, you know, there's a guy who just totally goes off for a million points in World Juniors and then never amounts to anything in the NHL. So it's not even like it's necessarily a good predictor of someone being a good player. Like Alex DeBrincat got left off Team USA a couple years ago, and you know, look at him now. Like it's with the exception of some of those like big powerhouse Canadian teams, like I think it was like 2003, that draft year that just had like every good player ever. That was kind of an unstoppable team. But every so often you're like, let's pump the brakes on getting real excited about this guy. Like he might not turn out to be anything.
Mm-hmm. It's so fair. I mean, it is an international stage. All eyes are on this tournament in terms of scouts, GMs, hockey executives, people around the world to a certain extent. And there is a ton of pressure depending on what nation you represent, but it is a big tournament. But you're right, it is not the be-all end-all. What you do in a 5-9 game tournament does not and should not really dictate who you are as a player if you end up having a long career or any type of pro career. But you're right, there's been some absolute heroes that have gone on to do and amount to nothing in terms of the NHL. And then there's been some players in this tournament that have flown under the radar that go on to have 15, 20 year NHL careers. So I think there's a grain of salt to a certain extent needed when you're taking in the World Junior Championship every Christmas/New Year.
The interesting thing about this year's tournament is that for most of these guys, at least from, you know, Canada and the United States, a lot of the international guys are playing in their own home countries. But for most of the guys over here, this is going to be the first time that we're going to get to see them this season because, you know, the OHL isn't playing, the WHL isn't playing, USHL just started, half of college hockey isn't happening anymore. I feel like Quebec, their league's the only one that's doing anything. And so for people who are, you know, not to be a homer, but like super excited about seeing Quentin Byfield play, this is going to be the first time we're going to get to see him. I think it's going to be even more all eyes on these guys because we don't have the opportunity yet and don't really know when we're going to. I know everyone says they want to start in February, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. So maybe kind of the only chance for a little while for us to see these guys play. And might also be pretty interesting because, you know, usually when they're coming into this, they've been playing high level hockey, they've been playing competitive games and, you know, getting into the groove of their season. And now these guys are all just coming fresh off of maybe potentially sitting around and doing nothing, depending on how committed the player is to that like off season workout and stuff.
Yes, it's going to have an effect, I think, on level of play. You're 100% right that there's going to be some decrease. And I think sharpness, it's hard. I know that the camp is starting early to get this thing going. I was talking to my buddies who work for the Oil Kings, the ones that I had to sneak the Mary Brown's chicken in during the last bubble. They're both working for Team Canada, and I don't know yet if I'll have to get them Mary Brown's chicken, but they are in the bubble again, and at least they've gone through that experience. But there's some level, I think, of adjustment that's going to come with this, not playing in actual games and having the pucks fly for real. It might have an effect. But on the flip side, Sarah, is these are going to be some stacked rosters. We're talking about guys that have played in the NHL, the guys who've played more than a year of pro hockey already that are still eligible and that are going to be a part of this tournament. I'm going to be keeping my eye on Kirby Dach because of how much growth we've seen from him with the Blackhawks. And then, you know, it's almost like he's going to be a man among boys because it looked that way against the Oilers in that play-in round. And that's a guy that I think is going to have to carry a big part of the load for Team Canada.
Yeah, and he's someone who everything that I hear about him is like he is just 100% committed to staying in shape, doing all the off-ice stuff. And so I feel like he's coming into this next season, or like he already stepped it up in the playoffs and is going to step it up even more this year. Yeah, he could be a real game changer for Team Canada. And I think, you know, the Blackhawks obviously want to see him, you know, be able to take that step and be able to dominate this competition. So yeah, he's definitely going to be someone to watch. A little disappointing that it seems like we're not going to get Alexis Lafreniere. I think the Rangers are holding him out a bit because they expect him to play in the NHL. So kind of disappointing to not see him. I know he went last year, but like didn't really have a huge role on the team. I remember kind of seeing him and being like, what's the big deal? But he was also, you know, one of the youngest guys on the team. And now it seems like the moment has passed for him because he's going to go on to be a big NHL guy instead.
Yeah, that's interesting too. I wonder if that's a bit of a tell from the Rangers and their thought process as to when the National Hockey League will be up and running. And if they think it's more important clearly for him to be in training camp playing in NHL preseason games, however many the NHL decides to have, I'm sure it's only going to be one or two, rather than having him play against his peers at the World Junior Tournament and risking him getting hurt there, as opposed to seeing how things go and being in their own backyard with the Rangers in their camp.
Yeah, I think there's going to be an interesting shift in what teams are willing to do and who they're willing to send to this. I know the Kings have already said Quentin Byfield is going to be there and he's part of the camp right now. And, you know, so kind of a little bit of a different picture for them of being a little more patient and maybe not necessarily expecting him to make that jump yet. But again, who knows what's going to happen with the OHL and if that even happens. I think the teams are going to have a lot of hard decisions to make once we understand what next season looks like. But a lot of very good talent going to be on display in a very strange, very different than usual World Juniors this year.
Totally. And Quentin Byfield, like, there's no pressure to rush him in. I know that the Kings are rebuilding. Let him play with players his own age. Let him have the experience of a World Junior. I get it. I get the non-rushing thing. That's a good thing. And Todd McLellan preaches that he doesn't want to give it to young players no matter where they're drafted right out of the gate unless he's forced to. So I kind of agree with that process and mindset as well, Sarah.
Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to getting to see him, and also just in general looking forward to having hockey back on my TV at like a seasonally appropriate time, like when I would usually be watching hockey, unlike the playoffs this year.
Yeah, that was strange. And I'll tell you what, having been at all those games here in Edmonton, I'm getting the itch. The itch is coming for hockey. It really is. But I think that little 2-month window was good in helping the soul grow back hockey-wise. But now that we've had some downtime and we're, you know, already midway through November, let's get hockey back. We should be talking about hockey and what's going on the ice, not off the ice.
Well, we'll have to start doing a countdown to some sort of competitive game that we will get to see in the near future. Thanks for chatting with me. Thanks for sharing your Jersey outlook, your World Juniors insight on today's show. For our listeners who want to hear more from you, find out what you're doing, hear more about the Oilers and stuff, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, Sarah, thank you for putting up with my rambling. You can catch me on Twitter at Tom Gazzola. You can also hear me on TSN 1260. Of course, I host the Oilers pre- and post-game show when the season does finally get going again. And you can catch me on the Oil Stream with my fellow TSN 1260 host, Dustin Nielsen, every Wednesday and Friday on the Oil Stream Twitter page.
Awesome. And I am available at Right Said Sarah on Twitter. Locked On Kings, of course, is found wherever you get your podcasts, just like this show, available in any podcast app thing that you choose to be looking at. Make sure you subscribe to this show on Twitter at Locked On NHL Pods so you never miss an upcoming show or cool thing that we're sharing with you guys. Leave a rating, leave a review, tell your friends all about it, and have fun. We'll talk to you next week here on Locked On NHL, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.